Welcome, everybody, to Space Force. I am Jason Tondro.
I'm Thea.
And we have a special guest today. My colleague and co-worker at Paizo, and my friend, Jason Keeley.
Hi there. That's right. I'm Jason Keeley. I'm a development manager over at Paizo on the Starfinder side of things. So Jake and I have been working through space for a few years now.
Yeah, when we first were working together, we were separated by about 4 feet in the same cubicle.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided to try and get people at work to call me Jake, because Rob McCreary, our creative director, would walk into the cubicle every day and say, Jason, and I would turn, and he would never be talking to me. Like, never, ever. He was always talking to Keeley. and so I decided to try, and I don't know if it ever actually worked, but now we all work from home anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I call you Jake, or I'll refer to you as Tondro sometimes too.
Like, yeah, Tondro's good.
That's also been a thing that's happened a lot. I've known and been friends with a lot of Jasons, being the age that we are, right? And it's always it always defaults to last names.
Yeah,
it's not like Jake. You're the first one that I've ever been like, well, call me, you know, call me Jake, call me Jay, call me JJ. Yeah. You know, it's like, let's call me my last name. It's fine.
And the weirdest thing about all of this is we discovered about a year ago that we also had the same middle name.
Yeah.
So we're both Jason William, which is weird. Like, okay, having the same first name, that's not a big deal. But two people who work on the same product line at the same time with the same first two names, like, that's just weird.
Strange. Okay. Strange. It was kismet.
None of this, however, is why we are we are here for Star Trek Discovery Episode 2, which played just a few nights ago this week. It's a really interesting episode. I was very pleased. I liked it a lot more than I liked the first episode, which is good, because I hate to be the person who doesn't like stuff. but anyway, so after the first episode, we have this strange gravity anomaly, the same strange gravitic anomaly that's floating through space. And in true Star Trek fashion, we have an anomaly to investigate, which is classic Star Trek. But this one destroyed Book's homeworld, or apparently killed everybody on it. And they didn't pull any punches with that this episode. It does appear that we established pretty clearly at the beginning of the episode that there are no survivors on the planet at all. So which means no quick rescues for his brother or his nephew. And much of the episode is taken up by Discovery's assignment to explore this anomaly and try to get close enough to get some data on it so we can figure out what the hell it is. There's a brief conversation at the beginning of the episode back at Starfleet, and we get a cameo of the Romulan president, the Vulcan Romulan president. And our admirals and the president of the Federation and everybody. Saru returns to the ship, interestingly enough, in a first officer role, but I don't think he's got any rank. Like, they don't refer to him. They refer to him as Mr., like Mr. Spock, and never by a rank. So, I mean, he's officially a captain, because that's his rank, I guess, but may not be, I don't know. Thea can help us out. She can help clarify all this for us. But then they investigate the wreckage of the gravitic anomaly, and it's surrounded by this huge cloud of like planetary rubble and everything. We invent some new tech, which I want to get to talking to soon about the tether we invent and all kinds of other things. But ultimately what happens here is that Book has to go on a one person mission to explore this anomaly. Only his ship is nimble enough to get through the cloud of debris that surrounds the gravitic anomaly. And Stan companies as a hologram, which there's a lot to unpack there that we'll have to talk about as well. But you have your emergency Stamets hologram, and the two of them get close enough to get a bunch of data. But in the process, Book has a bit of a psychological crisis, and for a minute there, it looks like maybe he might choose not to come back. That he might simply suicide mission, but ultimately Book escapes and is able to grieve. We see him crying at the end of the episode and actually mourning and kind of coming out of this shocked state that he was in. And the final plot twist is we find out that the gravitic anomaly has changed course, which means we can't really predict where it's going to be, and it could destroy anything at any time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so that's the plot. Theo, why don't you get us started? What'd you think? What were your first reactions to this episode?
So we've had this discussion last season. We discussed how you thought the jump to the future was the intended showrunner's original pitch for the Star Trek Discovery.
Yep. Yep.
And I pushed back on that on the basis that we've gone through three or four different teams of showrunners up to the point of season three.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the person who did the show running of season three, Michelle Paradise, she's now doing it for season four. She's the first person to do that hat trick for Discovery. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that these first two episodes are sort of a response to season three.
Okay, tell me what you mean.
So one of the things we talked about in season three was Star Trek Discovery is never going to be the show where we spend a whole episode rescuing three people in a lighthouse.
All right.
What's the first episode this season? We rescue eight people from a lighthouse, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And this episode, one of the recurring themes of Discovery criticism is the show never stops to breathe.
Okay.
The Neville stops to have a moment of character development.
Yeah.
And this episode, the whole episode just stops when they introduce the private ship-to-ship communicating holographic, which I thought was genius. I
privacy really bubble.
That idea, that little privacy bubble, exactly. Yeah. And it physically being a privacy bubble to actually do some character development, not just on Book and his trauma, which is the most important thing, but on Stamets. And how Stamets was feeling at the end of season three. So we have these two sort of recurring plot points. And granted, if this had been a Bowman era track, this would have been the whole episode leading up to that moment, as opposed to it being like the last two acts of the episode. But for the most part, I really do feel that this is sort of a response to the sort of vocal criticism of what sort of Discovery has been and is addressing it, like hitting it by the numbers. And so I ultimately went away liking this episode when at first I was a little bored because I can't really tell with the CGI muckety muck, like what am I looking at? Yeah. So when Stamets makes a joke, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, great. Cause I don't know what you ended the hook for the first 12 minutes of the episode on this visual spectacle. And I'm like, I have no idea what I'm staring at.
Healy?
I liked it. I thought it had like Theo was just saying, like when they show it, like, you know, do the polarized view screen and they show it and everyone's like, what? And I'm like, what? is everyone just awed because it's so big and they're real close to it, or is it just something? I don't know. And then Stamets comes in and goes, we don't know what it is. And I'm like, okay, well, at least we're on the same page here. And we can get some more information. But overall, like, it did feel like to me kind of like a meat and potatoes kind of Trek episode where they have a thing and they go investigate it. But while they investigate it, a bunch of people get in trouble and they have a bunch of character development and, you know, in the middle of it all. And eventually, resolve it with some good old fashioned analogy of something that you already know what it is. Like, it's like, oh, these weird waves are coming in. It's like, I used to kite surf. And I'm like, all right, okay, that's pure Trek. Where they go, like, it's just like surfing. And I'm like, it is. It's like a balloon with too much air in it. So ultimately, you know, I did have a good time watching it.
I loved a lot of the little bits that we saw in this episode. I love how, like, in previous seasons, like, especially last season, when we had, like, The Discovery is in theory like a first like a original series generation starship, but then it went to the far future and there was all this crazy technology and now they just invent technology and don't even explain it. Like, we need a cone of silence on the bridge. Cone of silence, and we want to do like some sort of fishing reel that like connects Book's ship to our ship. And we'll just pull him back with it. We don't, like, in the past, that would have just been a tractor beam. We'd have used a tractor beam for that. But now,
yeah.
we're going to just invent all kinds of tech that we because it's the future, baby. Like, we can invent whatever we want. And I, and you know, that's cool. Like, as a gamer, I'm like, great, because all that stuff gets to go in the Star Trek Discovery source book. You know, we get to invent all those new cool things. There was a lot in this episode I really liked. In particular, I thought that the writers were very smart about how they put Book on the ship alone. And so that Stamets is there, but he's not really there. Because if Stamets was really on the ship, we would all know that Book would have to come back, right? Hmm. Book could not crash his ship because they can't kill Stamets. Like, they wouldn't just kill Stamets on a whim, right? So, but because Stamets was a hologram, and Book, the actor, is so great. Like, he's so convincing. He totally sold it. And I was like, about 10 minutes before the end, I was like, is he going to die? Like, they had me. They had me hooked. And I bought into it for a minute. And I thought that it was just well constructed, because we could see that the meta narrative allows that character to die. Like, the rest of the crew would still be intact. The show would continue. It wouldn't bring anything to a crashing halt except for his contract, right? And so anyway, it was. I thought that was well done. For those that, I know occasionally I mentioned Star Trek Online, there's a weird coincidence with this episode, because if you played Star Trek Online, Stamets is a recurring character in that game. You meet him, but the trick is that you meet him as a hologram. Mm-hmm. There's this long mycelial networks plot line Star Trek Online, and your guide through it is the emergency Stamets hologram. And I couldn't help but wonder if, I don't think that's a coincidence. It can't be. I don't know. It felt like either a nod to the game or an excuse for where the hologram comes from. Like, the hologram that you meet in Star Trek Online is this hologram that somehow got preserved. I don't know. But I thought, but as an old gamer, that was kind of cool to see. Keely, we haven't had you on the show before. Like, how did you meet Star Trek? Are you?
Oh, sure.
What is your Star Trek story?
Yeah, I mean, I'm of that age that Next Generation was on TV when I was growing up, you know, I was maybe like in high school. And so I started by watching that. I maybe caught some of the original series episodes earlier, but never really, you know, got into it, but watched Star Trek Next Generation. So that was pretty much my jam, you know, watching, I think maybe a couple of the original series movies in the theater, and then like probably all of the Next Generation movies in the theater. And then, you know, just sort of, then it was, you know, Star Trek at that point. I started to watch Deep Space Nine, didn't quite gel with it, same with Voyager, and then only recently in the past, you know, five or so years, Paula, my partner, and I have started rewatching. We went through the whole original series. We went through Next Gen again. Okay. We went through event. We again kind of bounced off the beginning of Deep Space Nine, and then we went into Voyager. We watched all that, and then we went back and watched Deep Space Nine pretty recently. So Deep Space Nine is at a forefront in my mind lately. I think I ended up liking it, at least big chunks of it, a lot more than even Next Generation. Kind of overcoming the nostalgia factor in that sense, and seeing all the good fun stuff that happened in Deep Space Nine. We don't know if we're going to watch Enterprise. We're all just kind of like, I think I watched it when it opened, the first couple episodes. I'm like, I don't know if I really want to. And, you know, we've been watching Discovery. We've been watching Lower Decks, which actually, now that I think about it, Lower Decks might be my favorite Trek right now. Yeah. And then, Prodigy, the first couple episodes of Prodigy. So we've been watching I've been watching all of it pretty much.
So you're an old time gamer, and you like to experiment with new games and new game systems. Have you ever done a Star Trek game campaign?
I have not. For a while, I haven't really gone into not too many licensing, you know, like existing ones, until sort of like recently, when I've got this group that just sort of, we cycle through games every couple months or a month and a half or so. So we've gone on and then I have Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. I bought it, you know, Gen Con when it came out, and I've flipped through it and haven't played through it yet. Although my brain wants me to run it as a Pigs in Space, to, like, hack it so it's Pigs in Space, and then just that, because Everything has to be completely silly for me, of course.
Yeah.
Well, as someone who enjoys Enterprise, I would definitely give Enterprise a shot.
Okay.
Get the credits.
Yes.
Those full seasons. Season four is really, really good. Like, season four is sort of like the treatise of what the show should have been all along. But those some gems in the first three seasons. Sure. They also have the best Western. Like, if you're a Western fan, I don't know. But if you like a Wild West adventure, North Star in season three is the best Star Trek meets Western that they've ever done.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll definitely have to check that out.
All right, so let's get into some specific stuff from this episode. How about Saru? Saru's return. What do we think about Saru? Now, I went on record last episode as saying that the first episode of the season is called Kobayashi Maru. It's all about the captain being able to accept failure and death. And I put $20 down on Saru dying in the last episode. What do we think today?
Now that he's on the ship, I mean, I guess that makes it a little more odds in your favor. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen either. But him being on the ship now and also being Mr. Saru, I mean, it's Burnham calling him old friend. It's very much. You said last episode it's very Kirk and Spock, and now it's even more Kirk and Spock now that she's the captain and he's Mr. Saru. I don't know. Yeah, again, he's just a first officer. Whether or not, you know, if he has any other kind of position in terms of, like, because, you know, Mr. Spock was the science officer, basically, right? And he did all the sciencey stuff. But Mr. Saru seems like he's more, definitely more emotionally connected, where he can be, put his hand on, you know, Burnham's shoulder and be like, you know, put aside the captain now and now be the partner. Maybe in a weird way, the ship's counselor, even though the doctor is also going to be doing that, possibly.
I love this idea that being the first officer on a Federation starship is like being appointed to the Supreme Court. It could be anyone. Like, I could literally appoint my dog first officer, right? Yeah. Like, help us out here. What's the rules? How does this work?
Well, first off, military ranking does not apply in Star Trek. It just doesn't. They use it sort of as the shorthand to be like, okay, who has the authority in the scene?
Yeah.
Funnily enough, Will Wheaton has a story about how he had like a contract negotiation, and part of the contract negotiation when he was getting like a season three, season four renewal was they would promote him to lieutenant as opposed to giving him money. Okay. So it was like, and he was like, but I'm an actor. I need money. Like, this is how it works. I work for you. I give you my time and my days, and I need, you know, I expect to be compensated for that. They're like, no, we'll make you a lieutenant. It's okay.
I can't pay my rent with a promotion.
Exactly.
On a TV show.
I mean, when you mentioned, Keely, you mentioned the Star Trek movies. Like, by the time you get to Star Trek VI, you've got three captains on the Enterprise. You've got Spock, you've got Kirk, you've got Mr. Scott, the captain of engineering. Like, it's just... So apparently, you can just accept anyone to be your first officer and just be like, okay, this is Mr. Saru's spot on the bridge, and this is how he's a dead Kelpian walking.
No.
I did, however, I found the return of Saru to the crew to be very good. My complaint with the show for a while has been that Burnham is never wrong. And this episode, Burnham needed advice and support from other characters. And I liked that. When Saru was there to say, like, hey, you know, like, let me give you some advice. Like, let me tell you what you want to do. And I know what you, and I liked that. I thought the dynamic was really great. It does feel very Kirk Spock in the best way. And I mean, Doug Jones is wonderful. So I'm glad to have him back on the show. The uniforms, like the burgundy uniforms, also reinforced the Kirk Spock dynamic. It felt very Wrath of Khan era to me. I don't know.
Yeah, well, definitely in a Wrath of Khan. It's interesting because Alex Kurtzman has gone back to the well in Wrath of Khan a few times.
Yeah.
Like he did it, like, you know, he referenced it in like the Thor Transformers movie. Like he co-wrote Into Darkness. Like, he's gone back to this idea of exploring these themes, and I think this is the most mature he's approached the material. In terms of, like, Saru being reintroduced to the ship and to the bridge crew, like, the writing is top-notch. Like, he gets one or two really good lines of dialogue. It's like, oh, I'm going to be really sad when they kill this guy off.
My favorite bit in this whole episode is actually when Tilly says, are you taller? Did you? I love that. She's so great at the delivery. And she's like, are you taller? Maybe you're just swag. And I just like that whole sort of walking conversation. If Burnham and Saru are Kirk and Spock, is there a McCoy? Is Tilly the McCoy in this situation? No.
The closest you get to McCoy is Book, right? Like,
oh, Book.
So the way the Kirk Spock, the triumvirate works, is you have to have a character who's the fulcrum. That would be Burnham. She's in the central seat.
Yeah.
You need someone to play off of her. And the closest you get to that is Book. And, in the new movies, the closest you got to that was Uhura because the fulcrum was Spock, not Kirk.
That's right. That's right. Well, and this makes sense, too, because McCoy was always the emotions and Book is the empath, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got the empath and Saru as the that makes sense. Okay, yeah, I gotcha.
We need interaction between Saru and Book. That's what the show is missing in terms of, like, cementing the triumvirate.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And the show has always been very reluctant to do anything that doesn't have Burnham in the center, right? So having a conversation between Saru and Book, or having any kind of relationship between Saru and Book, is really hard for this show because it de-centers Burnham. And that's something that but we do see. I want to agree with something. I don't remember which one of you, I think you both got into it, but this issue that the way that Stamets relates to Book in this episode, I loved how the way that Book is pulled out of his suicidal urges is with Stamets saying, you saved my family. And of course, this is what Book is feeling like he wasn't able to do for his own family, but he was able to do it for somebody else's. And this helps Book feel like he has value, like he has accomplished something of worth in the universe. He has saved people's lives. They weren't the lives most important to him, but they were the most important lives to someone else, right? And this helps Book decenter himself and realize that it's not about me. It's about all of us, and I hate to say, I believe I'm going to say this, it's about all of us working together, which is this show's all the time overriding theme, and I hate it, but I also love it, kind of, you know, with a love and a hate. Anyway, I really love the writing, the way that Stamets was able to pull that experience from the end of last season. He even makes that joke about it, that business about blowing me out the airlock, which was a great, great bit.
Yeah, good callback.
And I liked how it was played up for comedy, as opposed to, like, it was played up as defensive comedy. And as someone who practices defensive comedy all the time, I was like, oh, I know that feeling.
Yeah.
That's a little too close to home.
I'm going to make a joke about it because I'm actually still really upset. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What about this, the whole central problem of the episode, like the gravitic anomaly and all that's going on? Keely, what do you think about the plot? Is it working for you? Like, is it a good bad guy, or
it's still a big question mark, right? Yeah. Now, especially even after they've gotten the data and be like, it moved. And then they pull back. What was that? Was that an eyeball? Was that a spaceship? You know, like, it looked exactly kind of unclear. So, you know, are we looking at, I mean, it still remains to be seen. If we're looking at some sort of giant cosmic evil entity, that might be, you know, I don't know how I feel about it. Yeah. In terms of if it's, you know, some sort of spaceship in the middle of that doing all the nonsense, or if it's just somehow a sentient cosmic force. I don't know.
Yeah, thoughts? Is this the alien probe from Star Trek 3?
I don't think we're going to be doing that because we did that last season, right? Like season 3, the whole thing was we think it's a menace, it's something we had to blow up, and instead it's a child crying out for their mother. So we've already done that plot point. This can't be like another alien race is trying to contact us from the great beyond and doesn't understand how all Euclidean geometry works. Like we can't get that note again the next season. I'll be honest, the plot isn't working for me.
Okay.
I was a little zoned. Like once the first 12 minutes happened, and we got the musical note in the like I own the other soundtracks, and I'm like, oh, that's the song they're playing here in the briefing meeting when they all like get their orders is Pike on the Bridge. Like it's one of my favorite tracks. Like it's on repeat when I write, like for Starfinder when I submit my stuff. Like that's the song. I'm like, oh, I know that song.
Okay.
That's the action adventure song, right?
Okay.
But for the most part, this plot is too big.
Yeah.
Like I know we've destroyed a whole planet of people and that we're cycling it through the lens of Book's grief. And that's very human and that's very small, and I can latch on to that.
Yeah.
But when like Keeley said, when the camera starts pulling out and I start seeing like what looks like multiple black holes and then like cosmic planets and galaxies funneling into this thing, I can't wrap my head around it in terms of this is working for me. When the episode started working for me again was when Stamets has his breakdown on like when Book calls him on his shit and is like, you haven't said the 5 words to me in the last 6 months. And then Stamets has no other option but to be emotionally vulnerable and be like, hey, I'm not going to look at you while I'm saying this because I got a machine that I can ignore you with the machine. But this is what I'm feeling. And once they did that, I'm like, oh, okay, we're back to Star Trek. We're back to something I can latch on to. I don't need to be worried about the big picture. I need to be worried about this one man who's going through grief. And the one person who would have been going through grief and is awkward about being in this essentially shuttlecraft with them.
Yeah. I agree. Like getting an intense character moments between Book and Stamets it's a refreshing change for this show, frankly. Like I'm not used to seeing that when Burnham's not in it. And so I was glad. I was really surprised that the crew, after they figure out that the gravitic anomaly has changed course, do not come to the obvious conclusion that we can get from that, which is that it's got some kind of intelligence behind it. Like if an object was coming into our star system and it suddenly changed course, the only conclusion would be that there was a intelligence there, right? Like things don't just change course in science. Unless somebody makes them change course, somebody does something to make it move. They didn't say that, and they waited for that weird reveal where, like you were saying, Keely, like is that an eyeball? It looks like an eye. Is it a giant spaceship? I don't know.
Yeah.
What it is. Yeah. I don't think that Discovery, as you were talking about, Thea, every season is we're going to save the galaxy, right? Like this is the in many ways the J.J. Abrams Star Trek television show. Like every episode, every season has got a huge galaxy threatening menace that we have to stop. And this is ours. I don't think that it's hard for me to imagine the writers of the show writing a natural disaster that has no intelligence or big bad guy behind it. Like if it's just some sort of galactic tornado, that's interesting, but I don't think it's a season long interesting, right? Like there's gotta be some kind of reason behind it or else it would fall flat.
Unless
this
element is only going to be here for the first part of the season.
Yeah.
Then it goes away, and then the second half of the season is focusing on the unrest.
That's possible.
Like it's the fallout of this event. Like I really hope it's not some like bad guy, or I don't want a con. I do not want a con. I want, like, this thing happened and it sucked. Now, what are we going to do to piece these worlds together again?
Yeah. Let's see, what else have we not touched on? Tilly gets a subplot. We haven't explored it too much, but apparently she's got some kind of issue that she needs some counseling with. Any thoughts or speculation?
I wanted to talk about that too, because it was like the first episode, she, you know, starts talking to Brenham and gets interrupted. There's something going on. You said maybe they're writing her off the show or not, but she's going to go off and be captain of her own thing. But something's going on with Tilly. We just don't know what it is. I mean, she had some trauma with the Nalus dying because of the last episode.
Yep.
But it was happening before that, and she's uneasy. I don't know, in her position on the ship, or just having some thoughts about, like, what am I going to do with my life here, you know, 900 years in the future, where basically everyone else I know is dead. I don't know. But
if I understood right, it sounded like when they mentioned briefly that Burnham mentions to Saru that Saru was offered the captaincy of, was it the Sojourner? Is that the same Voyager mission that the president mentioned last episode?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Because I thought, so is that what they did? Did they offer him that mission? But that's a completely different issue. Okay.
And that offer came from Admiral Vance, not the president.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
So it looks like the president's using Voyager as, like, that's going to be the flagship of the Federation. Like, she's going to plant her flag on that ship.
Okay.
And she's going to select the person who's commanding that, whereas Vance will select, you know, the captains of the other ships.
I gotcha. Okay. So, Theo, what do you think about Tilly?
I really don't know where that plot's going.
Yeah.
I think there's... Have you guys read Orson Scott called Ender's Game?
I haven't
read it. A while ago, but yeah.
Okay, there's a character in that book called named Griff. And Griff is sort of like the quintessential sergeant who's running these children. And he, because it's through the children's perspective, they have no concept of what his internal struggle is.
Yeah.
And as the book goes on, he's gaining weight.
Okay.
And you find out at the end of the book, once they resolve the plot and they stop the war, that the reason he's gaining weight is that's the only way he can feel decent about himself, is he's just overeating.
Okay.
And I'm kind of curious to know if that's going to factor into Tilly's plot point. Because she's gaining some weight, and I don't know if that's just a reaction of being we all in COVID and it's very difficult to exercise.
Yep.
Or if it's going to be a plot point in Star Trek, like I don't know where that's going, and I don't want to speculate because it just makes me sound like an asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to be an asshole because I'm very body positive, obviously, and I have to be now. Not now, but anyways. It's a weird plot point. I think there's going to be some sort of trauma there because. She makes mention in the full steps of the season that feels like yesterday and 1,000 years ago. Like, she's obviously someone who's displaced. Like Michelson pointed out, she's physically away from the crew. I sort of reject the idea that she's part of the triumvirate because she isn't interacting with them on an interpersonal level. She's interacting with them on a business working relationship.
Yep.
But we don't know. Well, like, Michael was Tilly's best friend. Season one, when she was exercising and running through the ship, that was Michael who was running next to her. And now she doesn't have that support structure. She doesn't have Stamets because Stamets has moved his parental attention to Adira.
Yeah.
So that connection for his whole personality is gone away. She's sort of ankleless within the crew.
Mary Wiseman gave a brief interview about a month or so back, and she mentioned that this is a problem for Tilly because she used to be rooming with Burnham, right? And now Burnham is the captain. And there's a weird kind of acknowledgement that your friends are moving on. And what are you doing? Like your friend, and what's your new relationship with these people? And what are your goals? And how do you relate to all of these folks that their lives are so different? It's kind of like when a pair of friends, one of them gets married and has children, and suddenly everything they want to do involves kids. And you're like, I'm not married. I don't have kids. How do I relate to you now? Like, what do we talk about? And that kind of unusual change of your relationship. I wonder, I guess what I'm getting at here is I wonder if Tilly's problem is not a big problem. It's a relatively small issue and it gets resolved fairly quickly. It reminds me a little bit of some of the subplots from last season that we thought were going to be big things, but end up getting resolved with, like, you know, a passing comment, like, oh yeah, like I did this thing and now I'm fine. Like, okay. Yeah.
Well, it was resolved the same way, right? Like that was the Detmer plot, the Detmer. Right? That we thought that, okay, is the control inside whole implant. And it's no, she just needs to have a conversation with Dr. Coble about, hey, I have some issues.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We never got to see what that conversation was.
That's right.
We just saw the start of that. And this was the start of that, I think, a little earlier. I think there may be a more, another complication.
Okay.
But Tilly feels like she's in the narrative liminal space between main character status and bridge crew status.
Yes, yes.
So she's kind of in that weird sort of like mixed juxtaposition between not quite either place.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to bring up is the subplot of Adira's partner, whose name I have forgotten.
Gray,
is that right?
Yeah.
Gray. Gray is getting a body. There was a brief call out to Picard as the trendsetter for this phenomenon, where we build you an android body and download your brain into it, and you get to live a second life. As well as an explainer for why we don't all do that. Of course, it only worked once, and now we just can't get it to work again.
Too hard.
It'll work for you, but yeah. What I was struck by was the use more than once of the word transition as Gray was talking about their body. As I make this transition, and this idea that the body, they remove that mole, if you remember, on Gray's hand as something, well, why don't we take this opportunity to make the body more like the actual me? And I wondered, like, you know, what you, am I the only one that's seeing this as a allegory or what?
You might be right. It does seem like, I mean, I feel like since, I mean, I don't really remember everything that we know about Gray from the previous season, but the way that he was talking was that he had transitioned in his corporeal form earlier.
Right.
And such a way that, you know, he was like, oh, I had a lot of other things I was worrying about. I wasn't going to worry about my mole. So I feel like that, and they're just sort of extending that analogy a little bit more, I guess. I don't know.
Thea?
It could be, we haven't gotten the episode, right?
Yes.
Like right. this is laying more of the track for whatever that episode's going to be.
Yeah.
So we could take it as this is the in canon acknowledgement that Gray is transmasculine, that he transitioned from, you know, a she.
Yeah.
With the word transition. We can also read it as, oh no, they're just talking about going from being a non-host trail to being a host trail.
Yeah.
Like there is also that reading that you can do if you've decided that you don't want to see the actor.
Okay.
Like if you're putting your blindles on, your transgender blindles, I'm like, I just want Star Trek to be not about things that Star Trek's about, right? So there's a little bit of that reading. Now, the thing that gives me hope is the fact that when they just remove the mole and it just goes away.
Yeah.
They cut back to Adela's face and their expression is a conflicted one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's like the actress, the actor is really good at conveying sort of ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, like you should be able to do that. Like I want to support you in that, but it's also like, how far are you going to go with this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when we get the episode sometime later this season, when they sit down, we're like, okay, this is going to be the transitioning from a consciousness to now you're a real boy,
right?
In a soon body, which brings it back to Pinocchio.
Yeah,
which brings it back, well, you know, right back to Data's plot point.
For sure.
Like, this is sort of the ultimate wish fulfillment of that character by another character.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm hoping that they go more into exploring that and saying it directly, because sometimes you have to talk to the cheap seats, just like we did in season 3 when we stopped the whole episode to establish Adela's pronouns as they them.
Yeah.
And we pause. Like, the episode takes a breath. It's one of the few times that Discovery exhales, it feels like. And that was done not because it's a big deal in the 29th century. It's done because it's a big deal in the 21st century.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that we get a exploration of this later on. But at present, it's going to be a cautious hope.
Sure, yeah.
I agree. Like, Adira's got some conflict going on in this whole process. It feels to me like if I was Adira, I would be wondering what our relationship was going to be like when you get a body again. Like, it would be, like, what is that going to be? And are you even going to stay with me? Or are you going to go off and, you know, be a whatever, I'd be whatever you want to be.
A guardian, what Graham's talking about, becoming a guardian, is that's the people who tend to the symbiotes, right? In what we in our household call the trill milk, that pool, right? That's what a guardian does.
Yes. Okay, so that clarifies that Gray would not be on the cast. For example, if Gray became a guardian, because Gray would presumably go off to the Trill homeworld and not be on the ship.
What's the other thing that Gray brings up in that scene is that he can become a host again.
Host again, yeah.
So he that would might become Gray something else, you know, Gray Dax or Gray, Inabran or you know whatever new last name. And we don't know the dynamics of their relationship in terms of, did Adela know Gray before it was Gray Tom?
Yeah.
Because that can, like, we're told in Trill society, we're told that, like, relationships aren't supposed to be maintained. Like, Sisko is the anomaly.
Right.
Though, one doubts that a symbiote has been in different hosts. I doubt that happens very often in Trill society, right? So you're not, you know, Gray getting a second symbiote, essentially. That's going to be something that I'm sure we'll have to explore in terms of figuring out what that does to your mind, what that does to all the consciousnesses. When Gray incorporates, is he going to have all of the Tal memories still too? I mean, one assumes that's in your brain, it'll stay there. But is that going to be a weird conflicting? Are we going to have another facets episode where they all talk to each other?
Oh, I hope they have another facets episode. That was such a charming episode.
That was fun.
All right. Well, if anybody has any last thoughts or observations on this episode,
it was nice to be on Vulcan, even if it was just a hologram. It's always nice to see, like, it's a nice little CGI thing, and I like the fact that we've established that the holodeck can be anywhere now. Like, it can be in any corners. Like, I think that's genius.
Yeah, that's.
I still love the relationship tension between Saru and the Vulcan president.
And it's like, get a room, you two.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I want to see if Saru dies, I want to see him have some kind of scene with her before he goes. Like, let's get some. I don't know. I those two were meant to be together. I'm convinced.
We do get. I mean, we saw it in the trailer for the season, obviously, but we get the quick glimpse of the Ferengi. In Starfleet, and I'm wondering, like, since that Ferengi is in this Starfleet chamber with all the other, I want to assume, admirals and
whatever. In uniform, I think.
In the uniform, yeah, exactly. Like, what? Who are we gonna see that person some more? Are we gonna know more about this Ferengi? We're gonna come back.
I really hope they'll be the captain of the Eisenbong, the Nog, reference. Yeah. I really hope it is.
All right, well, I think that's, once again, we don't get a trailer. Apparently, we're not getting trailers for next episodes anymore.
That is a true point.
So we're all just riding on the edge of our seats. But I'm much more enthused about this episode and this season now. I'm hoping that maybe the first episode was just not doing it for me because they had too much exposition to lay down. I don't know. But if the writing continues to be this level of quality, then I'm very much looking forward to it. And we'll be back next week. Our next week's guest is Jim Johnson, who is the project manager for the Star Trek Adventures RPG.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, he's going to come on and gamify the hell out of this show for us, which is he knows how to show me a good time. And I'm hoping now, Thea, you could clarify this for me, but it sounds like Netflix or Paramount figured out where their what side of the bread their butter was on, and are now reaching out to show Discovery to the rest of the world and international market. So we may be able to bring Aig back, bring him back like Mr. Saru. We're going to refer to him as Mr. Smith from now on.
Well, we can bring him back like how Scotty died in the episode of The Changeling. He dies for like 5 minutes, and he just comes back, and no one mentions the fact that they just killed off Scotty for 5 minutes.
So hopefully we'll be able to get Aig back onto the show soon. But in the meantime, thank you so much, Keeley, for coming on and sharing
my pleasure
this episode of Star Trek with us and for your
insight. Again, thank you for asking me. Well, who the heck am I?
You're my bud. You're my
fair enough. I'll take it.
To be fair, let's clarify something for the audience out here. There is no one alive who has developed more Starfinder adventures than this guy.
I was thinking about that the other day, actually. I'm like, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no. What's happened? Where has it all gone?
Where you have made a lot of adventures for this space game. So that I think that makes you eminently qualified to be a critique of Star Trek.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for watching, and we'll catch you next week on Space Force.
Bye-bye.
Hold on. Okay. Now we're